Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today we're going to talk a bit about Europe going after Apple over their iPod and iTunes. And what comes around goes around, and Apple gets so excited whenever some government takes Microsoft to court saying that they're guilty of anti-competitive practices. And so now Europe is taking Apple to court, saying they're guilty for anti-competitive practices. So we'll talk about that. And of course, the government has boundaries that God has authorized. God has given governments two just functions, and they should do those two functions and not try to do everything. And when they go outside of the boundaries that God has authorized, then they are doing wrong. And doing wrong, it's called sin. So we'll talk about that. And then also in England, they have the Guardian newspaper. And it's so funny. They report on a tragic story, the 15 Brits who are taken hostage in Iran, sailors and Marines. And one of the 15 is a woman who sent out a letter to her mom and dad. And obviously it was a bogus letter dictated to her. And then she sent out a second letter to the government, to the House of Commons. And the Guardian says, well, the first letter was obviously personal and natural. And the second letter seems, well, it seems strangely worded. Like it was dictated to her. And that shows how naive they are. They were both dictated to her. So we'll get to that. And then we received three emails, one from a music director. Well, is it a former music director in an Indianapolis megachurch? And another from a senior pastor in the state of Washington. And another from the president of a pro-life chapter of a ministry in Northern Indiana, and all three giving us thumbs up about our ministry here. So that's some of what we'll be talking about. Our phone number is 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Well, God has authorized governments to do two things: to fight against crime, including from criminals and invading armies and terrorists. That's fighting against crime. And secondly, to manage infrastructure, resources that of necessity must be shared, like waterways and transportation. God in the Bible says, build good roads to the governing authorities. Build good roads. And so those are the two just functions of government. Now, in Europe, and we have the same thing in different ways happening here in America, they're angry at Apple Computer and some of the major music companies they're working with because of the way that the iPod plays music. So you download songs, but it only plays on the iPod. And it can't play on some other device you might have. And so the European Commission, their antitrust probe in Brussels, is they have filed a formal complaint, actual charges against Apple Inc. Right? And that's sort of funny regarding their iTunes. And that's funny because Apple stands up and cheers when the government in Europe, and that has happened, and here in America, when they will take Microsoft to court, complaining that Microsoft is anti-competitive. And so this report out of England from the Financial Times says the Brussels regulator last week sent a confidential statement of objections outlining the accusations against Apple. Now, come on, accusations against Apple? What principle is this based on? Give me heavy metal or give me death? Is that the idea here? Give me punk or give me death? What, you have a right from your creator in order to share music you've downloaded on the internet between different electronic devices? That's a fundamental human right? It's just bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. So anyway, we see this as an example of control freaks in government. And people think that, well, we could design a government with checks and balances so that to make sure the government functions justly, properly, we'll have committees. And one committee will oversee another committee. Then another committee will oversee that committee. And we'll give the committees pretty names so that people will be in awe, like the House of Representatives or the Senate or the Supreme Court. And we'll have all these committees overseeing one another and overseeing other branches of government, and then the government will be good. It will be nice to us, except for the problem that that's a Pollyanna make-believe view of the world. It ignores human nature, and it's basically a humanist worldview where people are basically good. If people were basically good and you had enough committees with enough members in them, then you'd be increasingly inclined to get a good result. But people are basically sinful, and so the more committees and the bigger the committees, the more likely you head toward godlessness. So, okay, so Europe is all gaga over democracy, of course. We have a hard time finding a Christian leader who will warn the world about the humanist nature of republics and democracies. A representative republic is basically a democracy, just slightly handicapped. Okay, and our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. We'll go to the phones in a moment. First, this story out of Iran with the 15 Brits who have been held hostage, and one is a female sailor, and she wrote a letter. They released a letter from her addressed to Dear Mom and Dad. And then they released the second letter addressed to the House of Commons. And the Guardian in London, the Guardian in Great Britain, they're saying that the second letter is strangely worded. And although the letter was handwritten, like the first, it lacked the personal tone of the first letter sent to her family the day before. The second letter appeared to have been dictated to her. So I don't really care about the second letter because it's all make-believe, right? She didn't write it. She was told to write it. And by the way, the British sailors over there, boy, did they lay down for the Iranians in a hurry or what? I don't think they're being tortured. I don't think they're putting bamboo shoots under their fingernails. They look pretty happy, pretty comfortable. And, I mean, all they have to do is put a microphone in front of them and they say, it's our fault, Britain's guilty, we're the ones. I mean, come on. No loyalty at all. And, of course, it's doubtful that the British ship was in Iranian waters, because when the Iranians first indicated where they picked up the ship, they gave the latitude and longitude. The problem for them was that location was in Iraqi waters. And then they said, oh, we made a mistake. We made a mistake. Here's where we actually picked them up. So it's hard to trust jihadists, you know, for being honest. But anyway, so the first letter she writes is this: Dear Mom and Dad, I am writing to you from Iran where I am being held. I will try to explain to you the best what has happened. So they're dictating this to her, right? And they don't know English really well, the ones who are dictating it. So she says, I will try to explain to you the best what has happened. We were out in the boat when we were arrested by Iranian forces, as we had apparently gone into Iranian waters. I wish we hadn't, because then I'd be home with you all right now. I am so sorry we did, because I know we wouldn't be here now if we hadn't. And it just goes on like that. It's so absurd. I want you all to know that I am well and safe. I am being well looked after. I am fed 3 meals a day, and I have a constant supply of fluids. That's nice to hear, right? Wouldn't you want to make sure your daughter had a constant supply of fluids if, in fact, she's held hostage? The people are friendly and hospitable, very compassionate and warm. I have written a letter to the Iranian people to apologize for us entering into their waters. Please don't worry about me. I am staying strong. Not too strong, Faye. Not too strong. Hopefully it won't be long until I am home to get ready for Molly's birthday party with a present from the Iranian people. Look after everyone for me, especially Adam and Molly. I love you all more than you will ever know. Allah Akbar! Oh, no, that's not how she ended. She didn't end with Allah Akbar. But that's the, you get the point, right? Okay. So the Guardian thinks that that first letter had a personal tone, and it was not dictated to her, where the second letter was dictated to her. That's how ignorant they are. That's how ignorant. Okay, the liberal media. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. In Denver, Chester, welcome to Bob and Yart Live.
Hey, Bob, simply amazing.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. You can also have that. I have a talk with my friend that I was talking with this morning about people are basically good.
Yeah, now, Chester, could you speak up a little louder?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Great.
You're going to have a talk with my friend also. She thinks people are basically good, too.
Yeah.
But the reason I was calling is I wanted to ask you a question. I got something bothering me, and it doesn't have anything to do with you're talking about.
All right.
I got a question about Mark chapter 14.
Yeah.
The anointing of Bethany, and it's also in John chapter 12. My question is the dating of it. John chapter 12 says it was 2 days before the Passover, and Mark chapter 14 says it was 6 days before the Passover. Is this an incident that happened twice or something?
Well, I'm sure. Typically, when such an explanation is given, like this event happened twice, that's just a cop-out by some Bible commentator who doesn't have the actual answer. So I would say no. Like, that answer is given, for example, when the Lord went in and made the whips and he turned over the money changers' temple tables.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so that's presented at the end of his ministry, but the Gospel of John presents it at the beginning. And that only happened once. It's silly to say it happened twice.
Yeah.
And it happened once, and John puts it at the beginning in John chapter 2 because he's trying to make sure that his readers get the point that when Jesus changed the water to wine, even though it was his very first miracle, he did so to symbolize his death when he would turn the water and the shadow of the old covenant into the blood of the new covenant. And so that's why Jesus, when he does this and he says, destroy this temple and in 3 days I will raise it up. And they said, how could you do that? It took 46 years to destroy this temple. But the Lord was speaking of the temple of his body, and he didn't explain that to them. But later they figured it out. And so John put that story out of chronological order because he was trying to make a point. So let's say you don't realize John's motive and what's going on, so you think that there is an error or the story occurs twice, which makes it bizarre. And so quite often when we understand better, then we see, that looked like a contradiction and it was not. Now, as far as the dating, that's a particular detail that I don't have an answer for it right now, but I'll tell you this, that they use the term the Passover somewhat synonymous with the term unleavened bread. The Passover happened on the 14th day of the month, except that you were to purchase the Passover lamb on the 10th day of the month, and you slaughter the Passover lamb on the 13th day of the month. And then the Feast of Unleavened Bread begins then, and it goes on for a week.
Right.
And so that whole period of time was, in America, we would call it the holidays. Well, in 2 days, the holidays are beginning, and so I have to get back home. And so if somebody said that in America...
If
someone said that in America, we would not be exactly sure which day they were referring to. They might mean the Thursday for Thanksgiving, or they might mean the Wednesday when they get off of work, or they might mean, you know, Christmas to New Year's. Well, the same thing happened, Chester, in the New Testament in Israel. They referred to the Passover, and it wasn't a specific day. Oh, it could refer to a day, but it could refer to the holidays, which is when hundreds of thousands of people would swell the population of Jerusalem, and they would head to Jerusalem. Some would be there for 2 days, 3 days. Many would be there for a week.
Right. And that would explain why Mark chapter 14 says that Jesus was entering Bethany, and John 12 sits there and says that he was really already there.
Well, that very well could be. So without looking at the details right now and taking that time on the air, I would think that the particulars of how the Jews referred to the Passover and unleavened bread, these feasts, as though they're using the term the holidays, that would help explain the passages.
Bob, you make so much sense. God bless you, dude. Thanks for the help.
Thank you, Chester. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
1-800-8-N-YARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. So we got a wonderful email from a pastor in the state of Washington. And he wrote that he just listened to our CD debate on the age of the earth. This is Pastor Kevin, and he's a senior pastor of a good-sized church. And he said, Bob, I just listened to your debate, the age of the earth, and it was great. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And he said, I'm also now in the process of watching your DVD, Bible Tour of Israel, and I'm loving it. So that is just so encouraging to us when we hear from other Christian ministries and leaders, and they love what we're doing, and they'll encourage others to get involved with Bob and Yart Live and our style of Bible teaching. That's pretty hardcore. You know, take the Bible seriously from beginning to end, learn it. First, learn an overview of the whole Bible, learn it, and then dig into the details. And boy, do you learn a lot when you do it that way. You got to do it that way, though. Okay. Because if you start out trying to become an expert on the details, you don't have a broad enough foundation. First, you get the overview. Then you go in for the details. That's why our number one best-selling resource here is The Plot. That's my life's work, an overview of the whole Bible, 320-page overview of the Bible to go through, and it says, first, look at all the story. Look at the storyline, and look at the plot and the plot twist. And then, once you have the story of the Bible down pat, so that you get it, so that you could open any book in the Bible and you know where you're at in the story, how the story is unfolding, then you begin to study the details, which are the doctrines. So first you get the story, then you get the doctrines. And that's why God has revealed to us his word in a historical narrative. Because people can debate a lot about everything and disagree, including about the nuanced meanings of words, but it's a bit easier to follow the plot of a story. When you tell a story, quite often there are not too many arguments about, well, what happened in the story. Like God put King Saul on the throne in Israel. That's part of the story. That's not a teaching. That's a historical reality. And then God took the throne away from King Saul, and he put David instead. So these are not just teachings, they're historical events. And so as you become proficient in the story of the Bible, then you could learn the details. So it's neat to hear from Pastor Kevin in the state of Washington today. Also today, we got an email about the president of a pro-life chapter, of Northern Indiana chapter of Survivors, and they have a blog on the internet. And on the blog today, an entry about Judy Brown, president of American Life League, gave a strong endorsement of Bob Enyart's Focus on the Strategy DVD. And then they quote Judy Brown. Here is her endorsement. Focus on the Strategy is one of the most invaluable resources for anybody who wants to claim the label pro-life and work for the true end to abortion in America. Wow, Judy Brown, president of ALL.org, American Life League. And so this blog written by Quinn Olinger, president of the Northern Indiana chapter of Survivors, he writes, that's one big blow to the legal positivist legions out there and a big gain for the pro-life movement that is not willing to compromise when it comes to killing the innocent and God's command, thou shalt not murder. Praise the Lord, he writes. And then he ends with a passage from the Bible, Acts 5:29. We ought to obey God rather than men. Pretty cool. Thank you for that, Quinn. That's pretty neat. And then finally, an email from a music director from a mega church in Indianapolis. His name is Neil. And he writes, oh boy, he writes, Bob, I shared your predestination and free will seminar CD with a Sunday school teacher at my church. Again, this is a large Indianapolis church. He's gone wild over it. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Oh, it's a good thing. He's gone wild over it, and he shared it with others, and now he has spoken with our pastors, and he's asking them things like, why haven't I heard any of this before? Now, this is liberating to so many Christians when they hear a story or they see, let's say, a child pulls on the cord of a coffee pot at church, and the coffee pot's on a table, and a three-year-old child pulls the electric cord, and the coffee pot spills on her, and she gets third and fourth degree burns over her whole body. They rush her to the hospital, and 3 days later, she dies. Right? Does that ever happen? Yeah, that's right. It happened to Pop's granddaughter, Al Sharon, my stepdad. Happened to his granddaughter. And so people at the church then are devastated, and the pastor says, we don't know why God did this, but there must be a reason. And that is called superstition. That's what it's called. It's superstition. It's like you're in the Caribbean and you get some cultist to read tea leaves and chicken entrails. You're trying to interpret, what is God telling us? Look at the bottom of my teacup. There's the tea leaves. Look at the shape they formed. Why did God do it that way? Look, we killed this chicken. We slaughtered the chicken and we gutted it and its entrails have fallen out on the ground. And what is God telling us from these entrails, the way they formed out? Because everything happened according to God's perfect plan. So let's all be superstitious in the name of the Christian gospel. And perhaps we could mimic the world in such a way that will make the world jealous. That's what we do, sadly. And so this Sunday school teacher at this Indianapolis megachurch, he's gone wild over this Bob Inyart Live Predestination and Free Will seminar that's available on CD. And he shared it with others, and now he has spoken with our pastors, asking them things like, why haven't I heard any of this before? Because God is free. The future is not settled because God is free and able. He is able to write a new song, think a new thought, make a new creation. He could do things. He's God. Nobody could stop him. And so Neil goes on, and he says, this Sunday school teacher is saying to his pastors, hey, I grew up in this church. We're supposed to learn this stuff. Look what the Bible says and all these different extraordinary stories and passages that refute the idea of fatalism, that the future is settled. So then Neil goes on, we now have a new worship minister at church. Some of our choir singers give me glances during rehearsal because the lyrics to the popular praise songs that they're now singing include pagan Greek philosophy. Stuff I had changed when I'd been leading for the past 2 years. And then he writes sarcastically, Neil writes, so now we know about the things that happened before time began. So it's so funny, right? Because the Bible doesn't say that time began. It doesn't say that God created time. It doesn't say there's no time in heaven. Quite the opposite. There was silence in heaven for a half hour. There's time, succession of time and events. God created in 6 days sequentially. And then he rested on the seventh. The creation didn't rest. He did. And God looked forward to the cross after the fall. And then the cross happened. And Jesus is not still hanging on the cross because God is stuck in some eternal now. In fact, it is finished. It's finished. And now God looks back to the cross. At any rate, Neil ends this saying, the beginning of time thing always puzzles me. When I press people on the issue, how can there be a before, as in before time began? They relent and say, well, it was before it could be measured by morning and evening. And so it was effectively the beginning of time. And my reply is always, and you have to put your thinking cap on now to follow Neil's reply. My reply is always, so, if something does not exist before it can be measured, does that mean that nothing was long before the ruler was invented? That's so funny. So funny, right? We had no ruler, so nothing could be long. There was no temperature before the first thermometer. I guess the tree of knowledge of good and evil really took off its growth spurt after Stanley came up with the tape measure. I'm cracking up, Neil. You're too funny. Okay, hey, Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a great school. In April 12th, I'll be in Colorado Springs. Call us if you'd like information, 1-800-8-NYART, and April 25th at the Capitol.